When developers first started using AI to write code, it really felt a lot like stepping into a late-night jazz club.
Oh, absolutely. It was all improvisation.
Right. You just like throw a prompt out there, the AI throws some code back, and you tweak it on the fly. You just see where the rhythm takes you.
Yeah, and it's fast. I mean, it's incredibly fun.
It is. And the author of our source material today actually calls this chaotic, iterative process vibe coding.
Vibe coding. I love that term.
It's great. But here is the harsh reality. Jazz is incredible for a Friday night, but if you are trying to build reliable, scalable enterprise software,
You cannot rely on a late night jam session.
exactly. You
No.
don't need a jazz trio making it up as they go. You need a symphony orchestra playing perfectly in sync from the very same sheet music.
Yeah, that's a perfect way to look at it.
So, welcome to today's deep dive. We are looking at a really fascinating piece of source material from April 30, 2026. It's titled Spec, Standards, Specialists, How I Actually Build with AI.
And this is a great one because we're stepping away from the typical high-level discussions.
Right. Our mission for this deep dive is to just strip away all the glossy, high-level hype surrounding AI software development. We are going straight down to the practitioner layer.
To see the actual grounded workflow, the stuff that turns AI from a really fun weekend toy into a rigorous, disciplined engineering system.
Yeah. So whether you are an engineering leader who is just trying to figure out how to scale a team without everything breaking, or maybe a developer looking for a blueprint to stay relevant, or even if you're just someone listening who is wildly curious about how professionals are actually wielding this tech right now.
This deep dive is definitely for you.
Because right before our eyes, the fundamental bottleneck of knowledge work is shifting. It's moving from typing to thinking.
It really is. And looking at the historical arc of software development, this shift is basically the equivalent of moving from being the mechanic on the floor, twisting wrenches.
To becoming the architect designing the entire factory.
Exactly. And the core premise of this new era is that you have to control the inputs if you want to control the outputs.
Right.
To go back to your orchestra analogy, you can't just hand 50 musicians their instruments, point a baton at them, and say, play something sad.
No, that would be a complete disaster.
Total disaster. You have to give them sheet music. And in this new AI native workflow, that sheet music is the very first non-negotiable layer of the entire system.
The specification.
Yes, the spec. Writing specs with AI, not for AI. That is the central theme of this first step.
So the foundation of this entire multi-agent workflow lives in a pretty simple markdown file. The author appropriately calls it taskspec.md.
Right.
But we have to draw a massive line in the sand right here at the
Yeah,
start.
we really do, because a prompt is not a contract.
Right, typing build me a login page into a chat window. That is a prompt. It is absolutely not a specification.
No, not at all. A true rigorous specification has a very distinct structural shape, and honestly, skipping any part of it is where most AI implementations just immediately fall apart.
So what does that real spec look like?
Well, it has to clearly define the ultimate goal, right? It needs the explicit inputs and outputs. It has to list the system constraints, the bizarre edge cases, the strict acceptance criteria, and perhaps most importantly, what is explicitly out of scope.
But the real secret weapon, the author outlines, is actually the open questions section.
Right. Because the cardinal rule here is that you do not sit in a vacuum and write this document just to hand it off to the AI.
You use the AI as your pedantic, detail-oriented drafting partner. You use it to help figure out what you forgot.
Yeah, and the author shared this incredible anecdote about this. It was for a relatively simple settings feature on a side project.
Oh, yeah, the settings toggle.
Right. Initially, the author's human brain looked at this task and thought, oh, this is basic. Just add a UI toggle, wire it up to save the state to the database, and we're done. Basic persistence.
Which is how most of us would think about it.
Exactly. But instead of just coding it, they ran a spec review session with the AI. And the AI just immediately started asking questions a human developer might gloss over.
Like what kind of questions?
It asked, what happens if the saved value in the database is malformed?
Good question.
Should the system announce these setting changes for assistive technologies, like screen readers used by visually impaired users?
Wow.
What is the specific fallback behavior if the network save actually fails?
Right, so what looked like a really vague one-week feature in the developer's head instantly crystallized into a highly defined two-week feature. And that happened before a single line of code was ever written.
Exactly.
Okay, but let me push back on this process for just a second.
For sure.
If these AI models are supposed to be so incredibly smart and so advanced and capable of reasoning, why do I need to hold its hand so tightly with this boring bureaucratic specification document?
Right, it feels like it defeats the purpose.
Yeah. Doesn't spending 2 weeks writing a spec defeat the entire point of fast automated AI coding?
Well, the short answer is that a vague feature shipped at lightning speed is just a bug factory in slow motion.
A bug factory in slow motion. That's good.
The collaboration dynamic between a human and an AI is completely asymmetric. I mean, the AI brings exhaustive, tireless completeness. It has read the entire internet.
Right.
So it remembers to ask about the screen readers and the malformed database states because it literally never gets tired. But you, the human, are the only one who can bring the business judgment to actually decide how to answer those questions.
Oh, I see. So if you leave the spec vague, the AI doesn't just stop working and ask for help.
No, not at all. It will just confidently guess the answers to all those edge cases, and it will almost always build something that looks beautiful, functions perfectly, and is entirely the wrong thing for your specific user.
Okay, that makes total sense. So you sit down, you grind through the edge cases, you apply your human judgment, and you define exactly what needs to be built in your spec.md file.
Exactly.
But, a perfect spec handed to an AI that knows absolutely nothing about your existing code base is basically useless.
Yeah, it's operating blind.
Right. It might know how to build a login page in theory, but if it doesn't know where this code lives or, how your specific engineering team operates, it's just going to make a massive mess.
And that leads right to the second critical input of this workflow: project memory and coding standards.
Right.
You have to actively ground the AI in the specific reality of your project to prevent what we call quality drift. So the author breaks these rules down into two critical files that live right alongside the code base.
Okay, let's go through them. First, there is the CLYUE.MG file.
Right. Think of this as the technical preferences file. It's
Yeah.
about 200 lines long, and it tells the system things like, "For this project, we use a newer JavaScript runtime like Bun, not the older NPM standard, or our database migrations always, without exception, live under the specific DB migrations directory."
Got it. And then the second file is coding-standards.md, which is where the real non-negotiables live.
Yes.
Because this isn't just about where files go. This is about how the code actually behaves. We're talking strict file size limits, default security postures, and really rigid testing discipline.
Exactly. And the author had this vivid quote that absolutely nailed what it feels like when you don't use these files.
Oh, what was it?
They said that without specific standards loaded into the AI's working memory, the resulting code looks like a stranger wandered in with a keyboard and confidence.
A stranger with a keyboard and confidence. That is terrifying.
It really is. Because without those grounding documents, an AI model defaults to a generic best guess style based on just the statistical average of its training data.
Which means the code it writes will probably compile.
Oh, it'll compile. It might even pass a light visual review, but underneath, it will quietly and persistently drift away from your custom architecture.
Man. And the brilliance of the author's approach is that they took these rules and actually packaged them into a reusable AI skill. So instead of starting from scratch every time, those carefully crafted coding standards just travel with a developer from project to project.
Exact.
Because, if you think about your own daily workflow, jumping between three or four different projects all day, the sheer tedium of constantly reminding the AI, hey, remember on the client portal project, we use this specific error handling framework, but on the internal dashboard, we use something else.
Oh, it would drive you insane.
Totally. By baking those standards directly into the system's working memory, the AI just knows. You never have to repeat yourself.
So the specification file answers what we are building. The technical preferences answer where it has to live, and the coding standards answer how it must be built.
Right.
If you skip any of these three pillars, the entire feedback loop gets incredibly noisy and frustrating.
Okay, so you have the rules locked in. You
Yeah.
know what you're building, and the AI knows your specific coding environment. The immediate temptation here is to just open up one massive chat window, paste all those documents in, tell the AI to look at the code base, and just type go.
That is the temptation, yes.
But the author does something completely counterintuitive here. And this is where the system goes from a helpful little chatbot to a true, robust engineering pipeline.
Yeah, the author relies entirely on multi-agent orchestration.
Right.
So instead of using one giant generalist AI chat session to try and do everything, the work is broken down into a rigorous pipeline of specialized AI agents.
And here's where it gets absolutely fascinating. It is a literal fan out of specialized workers.
Yes.
First, there is the planner agent. And the planner doesn't write a single line of production code.
Not a single line.
It just reads the spec and the standards, and it outputs a highly granular step-by-step breakdown to a file called tasksdodo.md.
Right. And then, once that plan is set, the builder agent steps in, and the builder agent takes one task at a time. But importantly, it doesn't just start hacking away at the feature.
Right, because it's constrained by test-driven development, or TDD.
Exactly. It is strictly instructed to write failing tests first. It has to write a test that proves the feature doesn't exist yet, watch that test fail, and only then is it allowed to implement the actual code to make the test pass.
Which is such a crucial mechanism.
It really is. Because an AI left to its own devices is highly prone to hallucinating successful code.
Right. It'll write something that looks syntactically perfect but fails on basic logic.
Yes. So by forcing the builder to define the target with a failing test first, you eliminate the hallucination. The AI has a rigid mathematical proof that it actually solved the problem.
And the pipeline doesn't stop with the builder. After the code is written and passing tests, the reviewer agents take over.
And notice that's plural, reviewer agents.
Right. These are incredibly narrow, read-only sub-agents.
Yeah.
So you might spin up one reviewer whose entire universe is just looking for accessibility flaws.
Yes.
And then you might have another that only does a strict security audit, looking for injection vulnerabilities. Mm-hmm. And simultaneously, you have a docs agent running in parallel.
And the docs agent is a perfect example of why this specialization works so well.
How so?
Well, while the builder is wrestling with all that complex logic and syntax, the docs agent's entirely separate brain is focused solely on translating that logic into plain English for the re-aim and the inline documentation.
I see.
And it does this while the work is happening, not as a forgotten afterthought right before launch.
That's huge. And then finally, the author employs a closer agent. They trigger this with a specific check command.
Right.
The closer acts like a highly skeptical staff engineer. Its only job is to look at the finished code, look all the way back at the original spec.md document, and flag any drift or missed requirements between the two.
The author describes this whole setup as a dark factory, which is just such a great mental model.
It really is. It's like a highly automated assembly line.
Exactly. The lights are on at the inputs where you, the human, are carefully crafting the spec. And the lights are on at the outputs where you are reviewing the final code with the closer agent.
But it is lights off in the middle.
Right. You are inspecting the finished parts coming off the assembly line. You are not out on the factory floor welding every single joint by hand.
And the underlying mechanism driving this factory design is really just the limitation of AI context windows, right?
Yes. AI models have a limited working memory. If you use a naive approach, you know, dumping the spec, the migration rules, the accessibility guidelines, and 5,000 lines of existing code into one massive chat session, the AI just gets overwhelmed.
It's too much context.
Way too much. It can juggle 10 domains for a little while, but eventually the context window fills up and it starts dropping critical detail.
And then you end up with a missed security flaw or a locked database.
Exactly. Specialists beat generalists in this workflow because a specialist agent's context window is incredibly clean. The security reviewer agent isn't polluted by domains it doesn't need to care about, like UI colors or translation files.
Okay, so listening to this factory line operate, It sounds absolutely incredible. It sounds almost autonomous.
It does.
But, you know, if you are listening to this right now and thinking, oh, this is amazing, the AI does all the heavy lifting, I just get to kick back, drink my coffee, and relax, you are in for a very rude awakening.
Oh, yeah. We really need to talk about the hidden human toll of this workflow.
Yeah. The role of the software engineer is fundamentally changing, and the author is brutally honest that it is not necessarily getting easier.
Not at all. I mean, first of all, there is a massive upfront investment required to build this dark factory. You have to painstakingly write those standards, define the agent roles, and set up all the tooling before you get any of the promised speed benefits.
Right. And furthermore, running this factory requires ruthless human discipline.
Yes, it does.
Remember that todo.md file the planner agent creates?
Yep.
Well, if that file drifts from reality, say, you know, you jump in and manually tweak a database schema, but you forget to update the to-do list, the entire AI pipeline will resume its work based on a lie, and the whole system crashes.
And beyond the discipline, there is this massive danger of false confidence.
Oh, this is so important.
Right, because the code these specialized agents spit out is going to look incredibly polished. The syntax will be beautiful. The tests will pass with flying colors. The reviewer agents will give it a green light.
But AI polish is not the same thing as architectural correctness.
Exactly. You can very easily use this incredible high-speed factory to ship a beautifully written, perfectly tested feature that is actually solving the completely wrong problem.
Wow. So the defining skill of an engineer is just no longer how fast you can type syntax.
No, it's not. The author introduces a concept called the judgment load, which completely reframes the job.
Judgment load.
Right. If the AI is doing all the typing, all the syntax translation, and all the boilerplate, what is the human actually doing?
You are doing pure 100% high-stakes decision-making all day long.
Yes.
Think about an air traffic controller. They aren't physically flying the planes. They aren't touching the yokes or the throttles. They are just watching dots on a radar screen, making continuous high-stakes decisions.
Adjust altitude, change runway, hold pattern.
Exactly. But if they zone out for 2 seconds, a plane crashes. And the author says that at the end of the day, working like this, your hands are completely fine. No carpal tunnel from typing, but your brain is absolutely cooked.
Yeah, this workflow is actually more exhausting than traditional coding. Decision fatigue is the real threat here, because you are just constantly saying yes, no, approve, reject, tweak to an incredibly fast machine.
Which means you cannot deploy this massive heavy machinery for every single task.
No, you can't. If your brain is cooked just from managing these five agents on a single feature, you are going to burn out by noon if you try to use it for everything.
Right. You have to match the weight of the workflow to the risk of the task. Or, as the author brilliantly puts it, don't build a cathedral for a closet shelf.
I love that quote. Don't build a cathedral for a closet shelf.
It's so good. So let's talk about scaling this intelligently.
Yeah.
How do you implement this without grinding your daily progress to an absolute halt?
Well, the author solves this by outlining clear maturity levels for the work. Level one is just the spec and a standard human to AI chat session.
Okay, so keeping it simple.
Right. You use that for a simple copy edit or like a tiny internal CSS tweak. You don't need a five-agent procession with tiny ceremonial hats to fix a typo.
No, you don't.
Level three, however, is that full multi-agent loop with the planners, the builders, and the automated reviewers. You reserve level three for complex features where quality drift or a security flaw could be catastrophic.
And for the engineering leaders listening who want to scale this across an entire organization, the author maps these AI layers perfectly to traditional engineering functions.
Yes. So the spec layer defining what to build is just product engineering, formalized. The standards layer providing the paved paths and the rules, that's platform engineering.
Right.
And the orchestration layer, the multi-agent pipeline, actually executing the work is delivery engineering.
But if you're a leader setting this up, how do you even know if it's working? You can't use traditional metrics like lines of code written anymore, right?
Oh no. AI can spit out 10,000 lines of absolute garbage in 3 seconds, so tracking volume is completely meaningless. It's a total vanity metric.
So what's the real metric?
The metric that actually matters in an AI native workflow is the rework rate.
Rework rate.
Yeah. You measure how often pull requests need major substantive human changes after the initial AI implementation.
Oh, that makes sense.
Right. If the rework rate is high, it means your inputs are failing. Either your specs aren't real, your standards aren't strict enough, or your agents aren't specialized enough to do their jobs correctly.
And a low rework rate means the factory is actually functioning. So let's bring this all down to earth. If you are listening to this right now and you want to try this out on Monday morning, what is the actual first step? Because you definitely do not need to build a massive automated five-agent system by tomorrow.
No, please don't do that.
Right. I would think the best move is to just start incredibly small, right? Pick one tiny feature that isn't mission critical.
Starting small is exactly right. For Monday morning, pick that one small feature. But before you code, force yourself to write the spec with the AI. Make it ask you those annoying edge case
Yeah.
questions. Once you have that, make your coding standards real. Just take 20 minutes to actually write down your non-negotiables in a codingstandards.md document.
And from there, you don't need the whole orchestra yet. Just add one specialist into your loop. Maybe set up a single automated reviewer agent that just checks for security flaws.
Yeah, just one.
And finally, before you merge anything, run that manual check against your original spec. Close the loop.
Because doing those simple steps completely changes your relationship with the code base. It forces you out of the reactive, improvisational habit of vibe coding and into the disciplined, proactive mindset of agentic software development.
Really is a profound shift. We are officially moving away from a world where the bottleneck was typing out the syntax into a world where the only bottleneck is how deeply you can think about system constraints.
And that transformation is really the core takeaway from the author's workflow. But, looking at this new reality leaves us with a truly provocative question about the future of the entire software industry.
Oh, what's that?
Well, if the defining skill of a senior engineer is permanently shifting away from writing loops and translating syntax toward pure architectural judgment, intent definition, and managing system constraints, what exactly happens to junior engineers?
Wow, man, think about that. Because the traditional apprenticeship model for the last 50 years was, pulling up a chair, looking at the same screen, and pairing on writing the actual code.
Right. You learned by watching someone type and fix typos.
Yeah. But if we are shifting to an era where we only pair on writing high-level specs and reviewing architectural diffs, are we about to see an entire generation of developers who are essentially philosophers of logic rather than traditional coders?
That's the thing. How do you train a junior developer's architectural judgment if they never had to suffer through typing out the syntax, breaking the build, and making those low-level mistakes themselves?
Right, because in engineering, deep intuition and judgment usually come directly from scars.
Exactly. If the AI acts as a shield and prevents the junior developers from ever getting those scars, how do they build the intuition required to eventually run the dark factory?
That is the multi-million-dollar question every engineering team on the planet is going to have to answer very, very soon.
No.
You cannot just hand a trumpet to someone who has only ever analyzed sheet music and expect them to magically play in the symphony.
No, they have to learn the instrument somehow.
They really do. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. As you head back to work, take a hard look at your own workflows. Ask yourself, are you just jamming in a jazz club hoping the song sounds good? Or are you ready to start conducting the orchestra? Think about how you are structuring your own factory lines. We'll catch you next time.